Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Road to Pride podcast. My name's Jo.
And I'm Julie.
We'll be talking to brilliant people from across the LGBT community about what Pride means to them. This week, we're talking to James Barker, who's bringing a queer perspective to the work of Dolly Parton through his PhD at Newcastle University.
All the time with Dolly Parton, she's sort of representing things which people assume don't go together. So this idea that you can be completely fake whilst also being really authentic at the same time, that you can be traditional and progressive. So all these binaries, she sort of represents both sides.
I've just come up. I've just put some after sun on because I'm like, I'm roasting. I've pulled the curtains.
Oh, no. Oh, dear, Julie. Sunscreen. Look, that was the advice from Baz Luhrmann in the 90s. Wear sunscreen.
I know. And I'm usually really good because Billy is from Australia, my best friend. And she's like, she won't even leave the house without putting it on. So I won't see her later. Can you see my speakers?
Oh, my God. There? That's amazing.
So that's my new mobile. I got all of this kit, £200. That's my mobile speaker. And then there are 300 watt speakers. And then I've ordered a 600 watt amp online arriving tomorrow.
Oh my God.
I know. So now I've got leads.
What are you going to do?
I don't know. It's just so I can be loud when we can go outside again.
It's Julie's mobile disco.
Just me shouting.
Move apart, move 2 metres.
Yeah, I can just rove around shouting at people. That'd be relaxing.
So in this episode, we're talking to James Barker, who's a PhD student at Newcastle University. But before being a PhD student at Newcastle, he lived in Norwich and he worked at the Students' Union at the university here. And so he has a connection and he's been to Norwich Pride a number of times. And we're talking to him about his PhD, which is in Dolly Parton and the music of Dolly Parton and Dolly Parton's connection with the LGBT community and how LGBT people can see themselves within Dolly Parton's music, I suppose. That's a really rubbish summary of his PhD. He's probably going to listen to this and be like, that's absolutely not what my PhD's about.
Is it about Dolly Parton,
yes.
Do you think? Are you sure? I wasn't quite sure I caught that, actually.
Yeah.
We will talk more broadly about country music and the relationship between country music and the LGBT community as well. So we will tap into his wider research while, of course, understanding Dolly Parton more. Really interesting to talk to him. I could have talked to him a lot longer, actually.
So let's play the chat, Brems.
Let's do it.
My name's James Barker. I'm a PhD student at Newcastle University in the Department of Music. My PhD is looking at the music of Dolly Parton and exploring issues around LGBT plus acceptance and the sort of issues around homophobia and transphobia within the genre and the sort of popular debates and discourses around it.
When did you make that decision? How long have you been doing this now?
So I started my PhD in September just gone, so I'm coming to the end of my first year of studies. I sort of had kind of an idea that was floating around and then went on holiday to Dollywood and Nashville was when it kind of cemented. It was like, I should probably get round to doing some serious planning and thinking about this. And
wow, tell us more about that. Dollywood. Yeah. I mean, I'd like to think I knew they existed, but I got to be honest, I didn't. So that, I mean, going on holiday just sounds amazing at the moment. But tell us more about that.
So Dollywood is a theme park that Dolly Parton opened, like I think like the mid-80s, where she opened it in the East Tennessee where she grew up. So it's kind of got your sort of usual sort of, you know, what you'd think from an amusement park, but it's also, it does a lot of things around like preserving traditional crafts, so like glass blowing and those kind of crafts of the region, and trying to preserve a bit of that kind of heritage as well as sort of, and it also has a foundation, so it also does that support for people in the region, because I think it's one of the poorest, it's definitely the poorest sort of area of Tennessee, but one of the sort of most deprived areas of the United States, so it's got that kind of side to it as well.
I think when I had a look at your outline of your research, you say that there's an idea that homophobia and country music are kind of synonymous, or at least it's largely kind of assumed to be that homophobia within country music. I wonder if, as part of your research, have you delved into that and where that assumption's come from?
So, yes, I have. There's a fantastic book by Nadine Hubbs called Rednecks, Queers and Country Music, who untangles a lot of that. This idea where people make very sort of certain statements about country music being homophobic as a genre that's very much entangled with ideas of patriotism, if not nationalism. So you have this sort of taken for granted. But when you, it seems to be a very visceral response to it, but often when you boil it down, it's often an assumption that's not necessarily based on people's having knowledge of the genre. The Tammy Wynette, Loretta Lynn avenue in country is a lot more pessimistic about heterosexual norms than often gets credit to, but is often taken at face value. So a song like Tammy Wynette's Stand By Your Man sort of looked as being kind of a reactionary sort of anti-feminist anthem. But if you look into it more closely, it seems to be quite a pessimistic view. So you've got the number of times that Tammy Wynette sings about it being hard to be a woman, how hard she has to work, and how and she ends up concluding at the end of one verse that after all, he's just a man. It becomes much more about bringing to the fore a lot of the sort of material and emotional labour. The other point I think to be made is that, particularly in America, and I'd probably say the UK, that the middle class sort of media bubble sort of defines everything on a very sort of bipartisan politics. So therefore, you kind of have to be one thing or another, whereas a lot of studies, which Nadine Hubbs draws on around working class subjectivities, indicate less likely to identify with a political self. So it, trying to sort of read that, whether you're a sort of liberal or conservative lens, often fails to properly match up what the actual kind of country music is saying.
All right, that's really interesting, James. I mean, I did look up an article which talked about 9 country singers who've come out. Mm. So the first one seemed to be Chelly Wright. They talked about in 2010, which, you know, I guess in the scheme of things, then it you know, it sounded fairly late in historical terms. But there must, you know, there must be others. I was thinking about Katie Lang and even Michelle Shocked back in the day, who I went to see, but then I'm not sure if you would classify Katie Lang as country music.
It's quite a sort of hard genre to pin down in some ways, but also has a lot of gatekeepers trying to define what is and isn't real country. So I suppose on my personal view, I kind of think of country as quite a sort of open genre with different sides of it. Shirley Wright sort of was able to achieve fairly mainstream success before she came out. It's hard to sort of point out what was causing her decline in sales before that point. I think Katie Lang took on certain images to resonate as country, but didn't necessarily, I don't think she was part of a mainstream country market. I have noticed over the last few years that more and more we're seeing a little bit of LGBT people coming closer to the country mainstream. So someone like Brandi Carlile, who kind of very much come from the Americana tradition, but working with Tanya Tucker, one of the sort of figures of the, probably the only woman that was identified as part of the country outlaw movement in the 70s. So we're starting to see a little bit more of that coming into the country mainstream, as well as the songwriters like Brandi Clark and people like Lil Nas starting to resonate in the mainstream. But artistically, I think the genre sort of has a lot of tools that can be used to sort of articulate different LGBT experiences, particularly if you're sort of rural or working class. There are a lot of issues with the various places within the industry that I think the genre, I think still now doesn't live up to its full potential with that.
I'm really glad you mentioned Lil Nas X, actually, because I was going to ask you about him. For people who are listening who don't know, he is an American rapper, singer, songwriter who had number one with Old Town Road. And while he was number one last year on the American Billboard chart, he came out. And he's the only artist to have ever come out while having a number one single. He's the only queer person to have ever won a Country Music Association award. And, you know, he's disrupting country music in a number of ways. You know, he's young, he's black, he's queer, and he's creating country music.
Yeah, and I think it flagged up a lot of double standards within country radio, particularly around race, the way in which sort of soul music and country music share a very common root, both in terms of like soul music and the gospel tradition, particularly around the South. But also what we're seeing in contemporary country radio at the moment is a lot of R&B influences being just part of the country sounds. So for country radio to initially not acknowledge Lil Nas's country was very much a double standard, where a lot of the, where people like Sam Hunt, some of the sort of biggest hits that are coming from country radio, it's sort of just becoming accepted as part of the mainstream. I think that you have this thing where, especially people of colour, but I think it also applies to slightly less extent LGBT plus people, they have to prove that they our country, that they sort of prove that they're real country more than if you're sort of a white straight man. You can basically dabble in R&B, you can have dubstep breakdowns, you can kind of pretty much have your country music sound provided your label decides to market you as country, whereas I think there seems to be people have to sort of work harder to prove themselves if they don't fit that mould.
And how influential do you think Dolly Parton is? I mean, obviously her career spans decades. How does she fit into this world?
I think all the time with Dolly Parton, she's sort of representing things which people assume don't go together. So this idea that you can be completely fake whilst also being really authentic at the same time, that you can be traditional and progressive. So all these binaries, she sort of represents both sides. In terms of her career longevity, I think she's someone that a lot of people both look up to, but has also kind of been underestimated, but also been quite high profile in being quite explicit about making statements about LGBT plus acceptance. From the earliest point that I can trace that down is 1991, where she talks about that in her song Family. She also references in the Q&A section of her autobiography in 94, where she is very clear about LGBT, but also trans people as well. So there's a very consistent statements and a few songs where she's referenced that. So I think she's sort of been, I think, one of the key people in the genre that has done that.
I mean, I guess a lot of people might be quite surprised to hear that Dolly Parton was advocating for LGBT rights in the early 90s. I didn't realise that, and it's really great to hear. I suppose there's also this idea that you can interpret songs from a queer perspective. One that you mention is Jolene and the idea that that can be looked at through a queer lens. I wondered if you could tell us a little bit more about that.
So again, that's one a song that Nadine Hubbs has talked about in terms of her own reading of it. The thing that she identifies with that song is it kind of falls into the category of country songs of kind of the other woman genre in terms of a song about adultery, whereas often there's a lot of sort of aggression targeted at the other woman, whereas Jolene, the tone of it is completely different. It's much more in admiration of the other woman. In terms of the tone and the aesthetic of the song, it is very radically different to the majority of other women songs in that genre. I said it fills into a tradition of songs that are not necessarily intended to resonate in a certain way, but LGBT people, when they engage with songs, they construct their own meanings to it. People use the tools that represent their own lives and try to make the best of them. So I think that's quite in terms of a queer listening practice, that's kind of how LGBT people engage with the music that they listen to, especially particularly in country of very sort of high profile sort of LGBT artists aren't around. It's about what you then make with what you have that's available. I think one thing that I think made country resonate with me, perhaps, because pop music for me is a lot more aspirational, whereas I think country music sort of acknowledges hard times. So pop music sort of tries to make you want to be your best self. In some ways, country music helps console you when you fail to live up to what you wanted to be.
I would have thought that's absolutely essential at this time, and particularly what America and, you know, it's going through with coronavirus as the world is. But Donald Trump, let's just touch on him. I'm just curious whether Dolly Parton has been outspoken as he's turned back some of the LGBT gains made, particularly around trans rights. And I don't know if she's been overtly political or if she's more subtly, through her LGBT acceptance, perhaps challenged his stance in some of those areas.
I can't remember which one. It might have been the Oscars, where with Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin, where the three of them from 9 to 5 were on the stage, and whereas Lily Tomlin and Jane Fonda are much more identified sort of liberal in terms of politics, they sort of make jokes about Donald Trump, and Dolly Parton seemed to be quite uncomfortable at that moment as a performer, what was sort of expected of her, but also what she felt I think Dolly Parton has also said that she kind of lived by a certain value. She has challenged a number of toilet bans that were going through the US. She very much sort of spoke out against them, but also very much was supporting and affirming of trans people's rights around identification. And so it was interesting where a number of performers were boycotting a number of southern states, often rock performers. And I think there's a slight difference where a rock performer, it becomes part of their own cultural capital. So they kind of, so in some ways, rock performers can kind of almost profit out of boycotting a state like North Carolina. Whereas for someone like Dolly Parton, on a commercial level, to me, it's not comparing like for like in some ways. I think what she said was along the lines of, I'll address what I need to from the state. So there was a sense that she was going to sort of actually still engage with those states rather than boycotting. So I think she has quite a different approach. But I think there's something about the way that rock performers, I think sometimes rock performers compared to country performers are often assumed to be more liberal and accepting than they are. And I think one thing that always struck me is Dolly Parton's record on LGBT plus acceptance goes back further and deeper than someone like Beyonce, and especially someone like The Killers. Remember when they were asked about marriage equality, their reactions were like, well, I'm quite middle of the road with my politics, which I kind of felt was a bit disappointing from a rock singer.
Mm. Brandon Flowers is a Mormon, isn't he a Mormon? And
possibly,
there's some history around that.
But it's kind of an interesting one, whereas, you know, I think by that point she would have been in a sort of mid to late 60s from a southern religious background, and yet she's been speaking out on marriage equality specifically from 2009. But it's interesting, out of the two, just on their genres, people would often assume that would be the country singer that would be less likely to speak out than the rock singer. So I think there's this sort of double standard where country singers have to prove that they're not homophobic, whereas rock singers have a lot more sort of free reign.
While we're on the topic of genres and different types of music, it's made me think about something I was reading in preparation for talking to you today, which is, I don't know if you're familiar with the gay writer Matthew Todd. He's done a number of books around, he used to be a journalist, and he's written extensively about the LGBT experience. And in his book, Straightjacket, he talks about music and the role of music in gay men's lives and examines the idea of the gay anthem, or why it is that particular types of songs appeal to gay men. And the theory that he posits in his book is that because most gay men, but, you know, all LGBT people really, are told at some point in our lives that we're wrong and that we have something to be ashamed of, that is an emotional trauma. And so the big emotional themes in anthems, in anthemic songs about survival and being strong, and also having that level of vulnerability, from Matthew's perspective, appeal to gay men because it somehow helps to heal that trauma. And I wonder if any of that resonates with you from Dolly Parton perspective, or from the country music perspective, because you've been talking about how it speaks to the kind of hard times and dealing with things as they are, rather than, you know, an aspiration in, say, pop music, for example.
Yeah, I think it definitely resonates. I think it's the reason why I sort of want to look at Dolly Parton is that that idea is sort of quite central in that it resonates, but also it's like the dominant kind of idea about how we understand LGBT relationships to music. And I think you hit the nail on the head when you sort of talk about being from a gay male perspective, that's become the default dominant. And I think Dolly Parton is also not immune from that, in that a lot of the perspectives when we talk about Dolly Parton does come from a gay male perspective, because it's a genre that hasn't necessarily been studied within queer theory or within sort of around sort of wider representation. And perhaps there's an opportunity to sort of unpick some of the biases. So one of the ideas that I'm quite interested in my PhD is metronormativity and anti-urbanism. So metronormativity is this idea that the sort of LGBT subjectivity is defined around a very urban sort of metropolitan environment, a lot of times sort of based around consumption. It kind of figures LGBT plus people in the rural areas or small towns as either where people come from as children to then grow up and leave their family home in those small towns and villages, so that ultimately longing to be in the city. It kind of filters it through that lens, and certain musical genres, so dance music, disco, are very much identified within urban settings. I think country music in many ways offers us a way to critique some of that. So I think country music, and particularly as an industry, does have its problems in relation to homophobia, transphobia, and in terms of LGBT erasure. But I think there's also around, particularly around issues of class, which I think country music very much is invested in. I mean, more and more around issues of gentrification. A lot of the cities which are identified as being the place to be for LGBT plus people. So if you think in the UK, London, Brighton, and then if you think in the US, you've got San Francisco and New York, and those are a number of the most expensive places for people to live in. Not everyone is able or wants to, and then living in a city isn't something that works out for everyone. So I think country music attempts to represent and speak to that kind of small town life, can sort of speak to a wider avenue of experiences and a loss, which is more of a sort of everyday kind of hardships and struggle alongside the big emotional traumas. One thing I'm trying to look into is around country music as a music for the everyday and the way in which audiences listen to it. So it's something that kind of distracts you, but not too disruptive in when you go about day-to-day, quite sort of manual life. One thing that I think kind of epitomizes, especially now, is when you have the, I think it's the owner of Attitude magazine, writing a open letter through the Attitude platform to say that the government should bail out Richard Branson and Virgin. He's kind of picked his own middle upper class solidarity, where I think country music gives the opportunities for sort of wider solidarity across class. The kind of country attitude is everyone's equal, but we're all different. And I think there's that, back to what I was saying at the beginning around country music being misread. We often misread working class culture as being conformist, whereas actually there's a sense that we're all quite different, and looking into sort of working class culture, you see a lot more acceptance. So I think country music kind of takes, I think, some of those ideas of trauma, but tries to ground them in an everyday social world in a quite interesting way. So I think country music, what I sort of want this project to do is sort of think about some of these ideas and sort of turn them on their head a bit as well.
Absolutely fascinating, James. And I learned a new word there, which I love, metronormativity. And certainly, you know, it's interesting because we have thought about that as Norwich Pride, Norwich being the epicentre of what is in effect a large rural area, and how we plan our events and try and be inclusive of the rural area whilst understanding some different prejudices people might face living in those areas. You know, a question I really want to ask about Dolly Parton next is around her collaborations. She's had such a long spanning career, and she's collaborated with a lot of different people. I mean, what does that say about her? What do those particular collaborations say about her acceptance of LGBT plus people? Are there any that stand out on that point?
I suppose one of the biggest ones, which was probably where towards her early career, was her collaboration with Porter Wagoner, which in some ways, and her breaking out, I think, is probably quite a key moment, because I think Porter Wagoner ended up being quite sort of envious of her success, and they ended up having quite a bitter relationship. I think when she was first starting out, there was this sense where the sexism within the kind of country music industry, which sort of saw women in country music as just the girl singer. I've been listening to her albums sort of one by one, as well as the collaboration albums, and her albums where she's not with Porter Wagoner, their quality is much more consistent, and you definitely get a sense of her sort of building on each album, where I think Porter Wagoner seems to be, in my view, sort of restraining her. Her best collaboration for me is the trio album she did with Emma Lou Harris and Linda Ronstadt. So those are two artists that probably come from more the country rock side, and definitely more the liberal side of country. But Dolly Parton, sort of, for them, I think they really like Dolly Parton's music, and bringing that kind of, for them, a sort of sense of authenticity to the country music that they were interested in making. I'm trying to think of anyone where she sort of collaborated with sort of LGBT plus artists, and where that's sort of come from. I suppose she's sort of been more identifying in terms of the drag communities, the drag queens that are in the film Dumplin'. So you've sort of got that resonance. Her resonance in the drag scene, I think, has been acknowledged for quite some time, but it feels that it's the more pop side. So it's almost like they're trying to take the sort of a kind of metronormative Dolly, take the kind of the city bits of Dolly, the bits of Dolly they like, and then leave the bluegrass and the more traditional country and sort of leave that behind. Whereas I think the bluegrass and the the music that she was producing quite early on is also kind of part of the full package. And I think it deserves its own sort of proper attention and how she's sort of challenging and critiquing gender norms, and but also when certain ideas around the city, so for example, ideas around sort of liberal politics, development around free love. She had a number of songs that describe the experience where politics gets into a more conservative, potentially southern culture. If you sort of have that kind of thing which works in the city, what does it mean for women in rural or more conservative areas that could be used?
Brilliant answer. Thank you.
James, as this podcast is called the Road to Pride podcast, we'd like to explore that with all of our guests and to find out what you think Pride means to you as a member of the LGBT community. I know we've spent a lot of time talking about Dolly Parton and country music and the relationship to the LGBT community, but in terms of your relationship to Pride, what does that mean to you in your life as an LGBT person?
Kind of similar to my journey with music. So I started off, I think Pride really sort of resonated with me when I was sort of getting into my own skin and sort of being comfortable with my identity as an LGBT plus person. It's something which I'm become more aware about the limitations of Pride or some of the areas that I think the sort of experience that could do better. So I think this, whether it's class, but also things around LGBT plus mental health, so whether it's sort of unhappiness, just generally as well as mental health issues. So not sort of seeing Pride as the silver bullet, but it sets the sort of necessary ground to then bring the microscope to some of the sort of day-to-day kind of issues, which I guess in some ways is quite a kind of country response to that question. We need that sort of common ground of equality before we can, so it's really important that we have that established before we can really meaningfully go on to the next step, which is around improving the sort of day-to-day lives of LGBT plus people. Not just the long term in terms of what we achieve in the future, but a long term that we experience in our day-to-day kind of lives.
So James, if people want to find out more and find out a bit more about your PhD, how can they do that?
So I have my associated brand around it is called PH Dolly. Thank you for Bryony Porter, who used to work with me at UEASU, for kind of helping coming up with that. I've got a Facebook page called PH Dolly where I post sort of updates, Spotify playlists. I also have a radio show on Newcastle Student Radio. I'm not currently broadcasting, but I've posted things about that in the past, and I've got a few ideas that are sort of come into fruition over the coming months, so more updates. And I've also, there's a PH Dolly blog, but I've also been published in Country Queer magazine. So basically it's a place for people who either kind of are fans of country music musicians, activists, or people who are LGBT but sort of live and are sort of somewhat sort of attached to rural areas. It's an online kind of space for people who kind of feel a bit sort of in between two worlds almost, to kind of have that space to see what it means to be country and queer. And that they published an article I wrote about Dolly Parton a couple of months ago. So the PH Dolly Facebook page is basically the sort of main launch pad for stuff. If you want more Dolly or country queer updates, then PH Dolly Facebook page is the page to go to.
James, thanks so much for taking the time to come and talk to us today. That was really fascinating and I feel like I learned a lot. So thanks a lot.
Thank you for having me.
And I'm like clapping. Woo!
I'm so glad that James did a better job of explaining his PhD than I did. And do go and check out his Facebook page for PH Dolly updates. He's got some really interesting articles and stuff that he shares on there. All that remains to be said is thank you so much for listening to the Road to Pride podcast, and we really want to hear from you, for you to share your thoughts and your stories about anything to do with being LGBT. You know, the thing about Norwich Pride is that it is of our community and it's for our community, and we love the fact that people across Norwich and Norfolk and across the UK really get involved in our pride, and the podcast is no different. We want voices from across the country, anybody who has an affiliation, an affinity, a knowledge of Norwich that goes beyond Alan Partridge. We want you involved. So, like I say, go to norwichpride.org/Road to Pride podcast and get in touch. We would love to hear from you. The Road to Pride podcast is produced by Norwich Pride, and music is provided by Jess Morgan. Thanks very much, Jess.